Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fork Tales. Today we are joined by a friend of mine, Joey Jurgowitz of Tasty Duck, one of the most well-known names in the duck industry. Tasty Duck supplies chefs and restaurants across the country with some of the highest quality duck in the world. Joey, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Before we get started, why don't you just take a little time and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Tasty Duck.
Perfect. No, thanks for having me, Michael. This will be a lot of fun. And the duck industry, we're not the largest one in the world, but we definitely like to say we are the tastiest and the most fun. So so a little history about Tasty Duck. So my great-grandfather was one of the original Long Island duck farmers. So I don't know if people aren't familiar with Long Island, and it's a big playground off of New York City, the Hamptons area. Before it became that, was a farming area for potatoes, grapes for wine, and also ducks. So my great-grandfather and his wife started the duck farm in 1933 out there. They were part of a co-op and eventually left the co-op and started their own farm with his three sons, and my grandfather was one of them. My grandfather grew up in the business, eventually sold out to his other brothers, retired, and my father restarted the farm here in Pennsylvania. So a really long story short there, but the big thing here in Pennsylvania, we are a vertically integrated farm. So what that means is we do everything from picking eggs up every morning. That was one of my first jobs. We have our own hatcheries. We raise the ducks ourselves, and also have a lot of other family farms, contract growers, a processing plant, and then distribution network all throughout North America and certain export markets.
Very cool. Very cool. I had the privilege of getting a tour with you at your farm, and it's just amazing. I mean, the operation is first class. It was super clean. And we'll talk about the integration, the vertical integration. I was blown away by the sustainability and everything you guys do. It's really, really, a really intelligently designed business model. Really cool. Really cool. So you started out as a duck egg picker. Like, how old were you? Is that like what everyone does to start out in the duck farm? You'd be an egg picker?
I think so. I think it might have been one of the harder jobs to fill. So I think that's so. I'm one of four boys. So I have three brothers. I'm the oldest. So I think that was part of my dad's strategy. Also, is he needed some cheap labor. So that was we're the fill in. We're one of the few kids or children, I guess you could say, that hated 2-hour delays or snow days. My dad would wake us up earlier before then we had to get to the bus because no one else made it to work that day. We were working, so it was more of a break at school.
That's funny. Yeah, that's what happens when you're, anybody that lives in a farm or part of a farm, it really is a full-time, all-encompassing life.
Oh yeah.
It's not a job. It's just, it's a lifestyle. No days off.
That's for sure. Don't care if it's Christmas or Thanksgiving, right. You name it.
That's right.
They still need their water and food.
That's funny. So, okay. Your father created the modern day Tasty Duck Company in 1983. The ducks you're raising today are descendants from the ducks that your great-grandfather raised on Long Island in the 1930s. Is that right?
Yes, they are. Yeah. No, we're very proud of that. We're the only one in the duck industry that can trace our roots back, you could say, back to our original breed, our original farm. A lot of our fellow duck farmers, that'll be nice, out there definitely changed their duck and made it a lot – they chickenized it. So a lot of like in the 80s, a lot of people are against fat. And so they bred their ducks to have no fat and a lot of meat. So you really just had a chicken pretty much. You had no flavor on it, just a big chunk of meat. That's it. We kept ours as the original strand from Long Island. And our marketing, our big sales pitch is that we have it's the perfect meat to fat ratio on that. It's equivalent of eating a ribeye steak to a filet. Both are good, but one has a little better flavor.
Sure. There's no question. I'm a big ribeye guy. And, I've seen, again, the videos and the way the food, the meat looks, it's just phenomenal. I mean, super high. And it's kind of funny, you know, like I, growing up, I was in the restaurant business at a young age, and there's a chef and was very inspirational to me. Like he just was really an interesting guy. I was young and he was teaching me everything from how to, you know, make drinks to behind the bar at night, like underage. Like he's teaching me about like, you know, creating cocktails and just talking about like cooking and everything. And he always said, and I never forgot this, he goes, if you're going to go out to dinner and you're going to spend some money, like it's going to be a decent dinner, you're going out somewhere nice, you should never have to eat chicken, right? And that always stuck with me, right? And I kind of live by that. And there's nothing against chicken, but I mean, if I'm going to go out to a, you know, a nice restaurant, I'm going to eat something else other than that. But if you think about it, most all fantastic restaurants, like really high, you'll see duck, right? You'll see duck at the top of the menu. And it's just one of those neat kind of, not coincidences, but it's a special meat, right?
No, it definitely has that. I mean, it's over the past couple of years, you say, so we like to look at our market in two different segments. You have the Asian trade, which is still our bread and butter. That's if you go to any Chinatown in New York City, Asian markets in San Francisco, you see duck. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end of that scale, you're looking at really Michelin star restaurants, French, heavily French influenced. And even now you go to outside of those groups and you're seeing duck maybe was a special for Christmas or Thanksgiving or who knows what, some kind of like restaurant week. Now we have a spot on the menu. We got, mm-hmm. we have that, we like to say we have that respect. So mm-hmm. now it's kind of going more for how can we get an appetizer, even going down to a dessert, which could be really fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. And it is a quality dish. I mean, you know, I've done it from just from a high end restaurant all the way to, you know, like she said, Joe's Peking Duck House was my favorite back in the day in Philadelphia. So, I mean, just absolutely crazy, crazy good. So talk about a little bit about the Peking duck breed and why it's so ideal and for culinary.
I'm a little biased because that's the ducks that we do. That is definitely the majority, I mean, overwhelming majority of the ducks that are raised around the world. It's I'm a hospitality major, so I'm not a scientist or a veterinarian. That's the other part of my family is that. But I'd say it's more for the how they're it's a the flavor, of course, from that mm-hmm. duck. It's a very mm-hmm. you get a very nice, really mild. You don't have an overly gamey flavor to it. You have, it's extremely tender. And also it's a very, and you want to bring the business end into it. It's a very efficient duck to raise mm-hmm. too. They mm-hmm. are, they act well or react well, sorry, to our climate here in Pennsylvania and Indiana. Mm-hmm. So we can get a really good feed conversion rate and get the proper weight that we need to come to the processing plant. And, I'm sure there's a lot of other scientific ones behind it. I'm not the expert behind that.
I was amazed going through the tour, though. I was amazed by how much control you had over like sort of duck weight. I'll say the picking, if you will, and then the fat ratio and how important that was. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I know that's really almost the secret sauce. That's where that great quality comes from.
Yeah. So I guess we're a very sales driven company. So we have to, I mean, which every company should be. And it still absolutely amazes me how many companies do not operate that way. But when I say that, it's, we really go down to what does our customer need and want. So you go to the Asian trade, you see those Peking ducks hanging, the beautiful Peking ducks hanging in 9th Street in Philadelphia. It's, you need to make sure that skin is perfect every single time. So we have to pretty much start focusing on that from the minute that duck is harvested to mm-hmm. feather removal to how that duck is weighed and then how is it treated after it's USDA down to packaging. And really that's because if you have that nick in the skin, a cut in it, too many feathers, no one's going to want to buy that duck hanging in the window. So we need to make sure our stuff is perfect from the second that it is hatched all the way down to it's put in a bag or into the box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you guys have a saying there, a happy duck is a tasty duck. So talk about that a little bit. Like what makes your little ducks happy?
So I take this to a far end. So I have my master's degree in hospitality. So I think that is, I like to use the analogy that if you are staying in a Four Seasons in any city in the world compared to staying in a half a star motel and off of some highway. Both can be extremely successful businesses, but at the same time, I always say you feel a little bit healthier waking up at one versus the other. Mm-hmm. And it really goes down to air quality, to water quality, service. How do we take care of these ducks? Do we make sure that we have veterinarians that are watching over them? We have trained professionals that are watching over them. Are the truck drivers qualified or trained right? It's everything. So really all of that correlates down to a tasty product and to the quality and I mean, to really be blunt, is really the price that we can demand for our product too. It's a high quality product.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes all the sense in the world. And, you know, again, I've seen the facility. I saw like some of the videos, and it is, they're just, they're neat. It's neat. And you do, take very good care of the ducks. And I know your dad was a veterinarian, your brother. I mean,
He's a veterinarian also.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that's fantastic. Really. You guys are, your family's as vertically integrated as your business, which is nice.
I like that.
So in the United States, duck is seen as more of a high end meal option, you know, while chicken is much more of a mainstream. That's not the case like China. We talked about that. Duck consumption is significantly higher there. Why is that? Why is it bigger in China?
I'd say that it's accessibility. So, which we're doing a good job here in, say, North America and the United States. It's really getting, if duck isn't available, say in your local supermarket or even to those distributors that are going to that restaurant, of course, there's no chance. I mean, naturally, no one's going to buy it. They can't buy it.
Yeah.
So in China, when you go there, I mean, duck is in every single restaurant. It's a staple in their cuisine. But I'd say more as in the United States, as you have a lot of these, I mean, you really can't really say the same. Like it used to be popular, what, like 10, 15 years, like Asian fusion. There's so many different fusions now.
Right.
That they're not even, it's almost its own genre or cuisine. Pretty much. And a lot of that is taking duck and being able to bring it into ways that people are used to. It's that, you have to get over that fear factor. Mm-hmm. For example, like a new product we have without getting salesy by any means, but it's my new favorite one. It's called, is a duck carnitas. So it's slow roasting duck thighs into some Spanish Mexican spices, and it's absolutely delicious.
Sure.
And it eats just like if you're having a traditional like pork carnitas. Mm-hmm. So it's just really just getting people to try it. If I can get people to try it, it's 9 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10, I convince them that they're going to have duck on their menus at home or at the next restaurant they go to.
That's it. I mean, like, our agency's Quench, and all we do is CPG food and beverage. And 9 out of 10 times, we got to get our products in clients' mouths. But once they try it, I mean, look, advertising is not going to sell a bad product, certainly not more than once. But once you get it in and it's a great product, quality product, it just sells itself. And I think, too, like, you know, we're big on doing trends, food trends. And, you know, protein, that's obviously huge. And duck is very, very high in protein. Then you have also, like, I'll say a younger generation who is very foodie centric, right? They're willing to try things, experiment. Like you said, the duck carnitas. Like I feel like duck is so much more on the menu in the last, say, 5 years or 3 years even than it had been in the last, 30 years. It just seems to me anyway. And I just feel like there is a great opportunity. So, I mean, people are willing to experiment a little bit, right? And I think that's, you're right on trend in a couple of these different, areas.
Yeah. I think also thank God it was 5 years ago, but it feels like yesterday, but like COVID, for example, that got people.
Yeah.
It forced them to get out of their element or their everyday routine of cooking chicken and steak every single day. So like, people got so bored because you kind of go to a restaurant to try and experience or get adventurous. So they had to be at home.
Right.
So that was as much as it was terrible for us, it was in the long run, it was great because you had this whole new generation of eaters, not just saying generationally, like just take everyone, start over again, the world's eating over again. And they had to be forced to. And luckily duck made a lot of those shopping lists or Instacarts back home.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the biggest misconception about cooking and eating duck?
You could go on for days with that. I mean, the biggest one is, it's not greasy, and it is the simplest thing to cook. A duck breast can be, I could cook you a duck breast in 17 minutes, and we could literally 17 minutes, skin side down, flip it for one or two, eat it medium rare, and you're going to have one of the best pieces of protein meat ever. And natural flavor too.
Yeah.
A little bit of salt. If you want some pepper for like get a little spice to it, perfect.
Perfect. That's awesome. So what advice do you have for like chefs or home cooks who are or intimidated by making it?
Don't try too hard. It's simpler the better from the ingredients that you use. That duck, and I mean, you could say this to for a lot of proteins or meats out there, is simpler the better on everything. That's it's natural flavor and enjoy it. You have to experiment and try it.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm a big hunter, and at times we get elk meat and it's absolutely phenomenal, delicious. But a lot of times when people get these kinds of meats that they're not used to, these kind of proteins, they overcook them. They feel like they gotta affect them by spicing them or marinating all this stuff, and they just take the flavor out. And it's a shame. And I imagine to a degree, duck could be that way. I mean, people probably think, oh my gosh, duck, I gotta fix this. I gotta cover this up or whatever. And it's not the case at all.
Yeah, definitely. We always laugh. I mean, still, I mean, some people can still pull it off. We have like what the famous like duck à l'orange from like Julia Childs and everybody. It's now we made a joke. We have a duck stick now and we did a duck à l'orange flavor for it. But like, you don't need to go smother it in some sauce to right, cover it up. Right. Just eat oranges if you want to do that. Yeah. Throw a jam.
That's funny. That's true. That's, you know, that's funny. Is there anything like that any chefs that are leading the way when it comes to preparing ducks, anything specific, anything that's like kind of popping in trends or anything like that?
On the duck front, it's so versatile. I mean, we're seeing a really big, I mentioned the duck carnitas, you're seeing a really big uptick in Mexican or like Spanish cuisines and incorporating duck into that. One that we're doing here at Jergowitz is a dry age program. So we're taking duck crowns and they're still on the backbone and we're aging them from anywhere from 8 to 14 days. And it just is adding just a new flavor to it. And also just it's a different cooking experience.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Very cool.
And we're such a niche business that at the same time you're talking about trends, like we have to, our goal here is to create a niche in our niche. We have to constantly improve and do better just so we can be that one step in front of our competitors all the time.
So what's your vision for the future? Is there like, what are your goals? I mean, you're obviously growing. I mean, the category seems to be growing. You guys are leading it. What's the future? What are you looking at?
There's a couple different ways. One strategy that we are having in our company has a really big focus on retail. So we are talking about having access to duck. We are successful so far with Whole Foods right now. We do a great fresh program with them and are proving that if you have duck on a shelf, people will buy it. So we do have a lot of other retailers that are targets or current ones that we're bringing brand new products to that are, they're more relatable to people. So it could be, or getting that fear factor stay out. So a lot of it is a pre-cooked item. So we have some confit duck legs. You just have to heat it up. We have a cooked half duck, duck bratwurst, just to get over that fear factor and people want to try and get them curious and hopefully repeat that buy.
Mm-hmm. So do you have some new products? Is that like, is that one of the newer products that you're doing or is there anything that you have that's going on new that's, on horizon?
Yeah. New ones right now are, we're doing a Peking duck bratwurst. So we're taking it started off as like a stadium. How could we get duck into a stadium atmosphere? So we just took pretty much the size of a normal, like the Johnsonville style bratwurst, put 100% duck meat in it. And then we took all the seasonings and flavors from a true Peking duck that you'd see in Chinatown and throw it in there. And the goal is throw it on a potato roll, piece of cucumber, and then hoisin sauce instead of ketchup.
Oh, sure.
And just that stadium Peking duck.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious, actually. I just love that. So that's right up my alley. That's fantastic.
But overall strategy, it's going back to that access of just getting people to try duck and, that's what we're a very small market and there's a lot of people that have never had it before and a lot of low hanging fruit. And just the more people we can get trying that, more chefs that are putting it on their menus is of course a win every single day for us.
Yeah. Now let's talk about like the pet treats a little bit. So I have a dog and you were talking about the pet treats and how, it's a very popular item for duck pet treats. And so I assumed when I went to the pet store to look for different, to do some research in the category, I expected to see little like duck shaped cookies, right?
Oh, yeah.
But this is not that. This is not that. You guys are very, very sustainable with everything, which is awesome. So can you talk about the pet treats a little bit?
Yeah. So we don't like any waste. I don't think anybody does. So we try to use every single part of the duck, even if it was from our barns of using manure for compost, feathers are washed clean for pillows, comforters, ski jackets. So the pet treats are really pretty much going right down that alley. So we're doing a single ingredient item. So looking at the trends of the United States of human consumers, you're looking for very simple ingredients, like ingredient lists that you can recognize, read. You don't need a PhD to understand what they are. So our pet treats are exactly the same. It's just a duck neck. It's a duck feet, duck heads. Mm-hmm. It's a shelf stable product and it's a very high in protein, a lot of great nutrients for the dogs or cats even in that. And it's a new project for us where there's a big pet food show going on this week in Orlando that we'll be displaying at. And I think knock on wood, I think we almost have everything sold for the year. So it's a great new item. And now it's just how do we differentiate it and go further in that category?
And it is amazing because it's the feet, it's the bill and all that. I mean, the remains, there's fertilizer, what, and the pillows, you make your own pillows with the feathers. Talk a little bit about the sustainability of the factory.
Yeah. So we don't physically make the pillows. We collect all the feathers after the duck is harvested. We remove the feathers, we wash those feathers, we dry them. And then we have a couple partners around the United States that we sell those feathers to. And that could end up in pillows for nice hotels to ski jackets, mm-hmm. you name it. On the other end, a lot of the we don't sell. I wish we could sell our fertilizer. We're gonna do a compost project one day, but right now, as much as our, we'll call it the duck poop, to be PGA, is used for all of our own fields or neighboring farms. So instead of using a lot of the artificial fertilizers out there, they can use this, and it's a nice natural way to bring their soil back to life and really harvest some nice crops.
Yeah. And you do have pillows though for sale, right? On your website.
Yes, we do sell the pillows on our, yeah, we do sell those. So we didn't manufacture those, but we work with our partners on that. And it's just a really fun item. And I can't, I hate if I go to a hotel and they have like a, like synthetic or like fake, I can't sleep anymore. What's going on?
You're spoiled. you gotta have the down pillows and the down comforter. That's a must in any place. So
exactly.
So you do the fertilizer, you have a lot of the farms. I mean, you guys, I mean, at one point in time, you were able to raise everything, grow your crops, your feed all in one place. Obviously, that's changed with the size of the operation. Now, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we vertically integrate. So we still do a little bit of our own farming ourselves.
Sure.
Because it's just in our blood, and it's part of us and part of our business. So a majority of our ducks now are raised by a lot of family farms within a 2-hour radius of our headquarters here in Berks County, PA. And it could be anybody that is a crop farmer, is a dairy farmer. They can mm-hmm. go build a duck house to our specs. I guess simplifying it, my brothers would kill me if I always simplify stuff too much, but is looking at like they'd be buying a baby duck from us. They raise it to our standards, our feed, our management, and then we buy that back from them. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of like more of like a franchise kind of concept to mm-hmm. it. But it's a great selling point though too for saving the family farm. You have a lot of people that have farming in their blood, in their history of their family. And a lot of it with, especially with dairy, crops, I mean, there are commodity markets that are all over the place. So this is a great supplemental income that eventually becomes their primary income. And then they get to play farmer on their other end and have their fun.
That's awesome. Very cool. So how do you control, like, get consistent quality, you know, from that many farms? Is it feed? Is it the water? They have to follow your specifications, just like a franchise, to your mm-hmm. point. Is that basically what does it?
Yeah. So all the genetics originate from us. The baby ducks originate from us. The feed formulas are done by our selected feed mills, and then our nutritionists on staff. And then also then we have a great technicians that are on the field every single week. They'll be visiting every single grower at least twice a week.
Wow.
Just making sure. And then also with technology it can be a curse, but for us, it's something that is absolutely amazing. We can measure to see what the temperatures are in those barns, make sure air quality is good, make mm-hmm. sure water pressure is good. And can then that can help us deliver that consistency. We have a funny saying that Dr. Joe always says that we want to be boringly consistent. Mm-hmm. And we just want to put you to sleep. We're going to be so reliable and consistent every single time.
That's fantastic. I mean, and again, I keep saying this, but it was, I'm very lucky. I get to go to a lot of different food manufacturing plants, tours, whatever you want to call it. And I was really impressed by yours. I mean, the cleanliness, the organization, and just how well thought out it was as far as sustainability and, you know, like you said, it's just the right thing to do, you know, but it's really, really amazing. And
Thank you.
I don't know who the genius was behind all that, figuring that out, because you were reusing waters, you know, purified waters, you just multiple levels to this stuff, which I was really, really impressed with.
Yeah, there's definitely we might not think it sometimes, but there's a method to the madness or whatever, vice versa.
Yeah, that's Very cool. Very cool. All right. So we're gonna play a little game here. All right. So this is a little bit of a duck trivia. We're gonna play duck truth. I don't write this stuff, by the way. So anyway, well, so here we have this game. So duck truth. We're gonna read three facts about ducks. Two of them are true and one is false. Like just like two truths and a lie, but with ducks.
Yeah, I like
all right?
it.
All right. So tell me which one is false. All right, round one. Ducks have waterproof feathers. Number two, a group of ducks is called a dynasty. And number three, ducks can sleep with one eye open.
I feel like somehow this is going to this is gonna get me one day on some of these. I'm going to say that the false one is number two. Ducks is called a dynasty.
That is correct. I think Duck Dynasty was a TV show, not the same ducks that you guys are providing.
Yes. So, yeah.
And as far as one of these.
Provide the ducks for the guys that have the bad aim.
Yeah. That's right. I think my wife is, you know, I think she sleeps with one eye open. So I think that's. So, yeah, that's, you know, we could put her in there. So anyway. All right. Round two. Some ducks can change their gender. Ducks have three eyelids, and ducks can walk backwards.
Oh, I thought we solved some of these problems in the last in November. But, I have to put my note on. I'm not the scientist on this one by any means. So I'm gonna say number one is the false one there. But
nope, it's not. They can change gender. they're ahead of their time, you know. But they can't walk backwards.
I'm not gonna Google that one. You'll flag me.
yeah. But they can't walk backwards, which
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never really seen a duck walk backwards. So I guess that makes sense.
So did I lose?
Yeah, that one you're allowed. Yeah, you're one and one right now. So this is the final one, and this is for the win or lose. So, okay. Ducks can fly as fast as 60 miles per hour. Donald Duck was banned in Finland because he doesn't wear pants. And ducks have been known to surf waves for fun. Which one is false?
I'm going to say number two. We'll say the
well done. Yes, Donald Duck was not banned. It's an urban legend. So you nailed it. Two out of three.
That's a winning. Take it.
That's a winning. That's a winning score. So you did quite well. You did better than everybody else that we give the duck truth quiz to. So
I love it.
Anyway, all right. So I got one final question. All right, and I asked this of all our guests: if you had one final meal, what would you eat and why? And it can't be duck. I got to take that off.
Ah, okay. One final meal. Wow. There's a cookbook out there. I don't know if you saw that yet. It's it's called The Last Supper, I think it is.
Yeah.
And they interviewed all the chefs out there that had what would their last supper meal be? The pun on the Bible part. But yeah, one chef put out there something like 100 different courses because he's like, I didn't want it to end. But man, without duck, I mean, again, I'm just – like I was saying earlier, simpler the better. I mean, I really like other than duck, if you just had a nice prime or better New York strip steak, a little bit of salt and pepper on a grill, medium
fantastic.
Rare.
Fantastic.
I would take that.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. So I want to ask you another thing. You work with a lot of Michelin star chefs. And I want to ask you if you have a favorite restaurant you've eaten at, because that just gets a little weird. You know, I don't want to put you on that kind of a spot.
Dangerous one. All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gurgowitz duck. They're all my favorites.
Yeah, of course. Right. Yeah. Everyone's a favorite. But, you know, is there any place that comes to mind, that place that you love to check out or one of your favorite places in the country or anything like that?
I mean, it's neat, but we're very lucky. We get to, if you look at the list of some of the top restaurants in the world, I mean, you just had on the Lay list, I guess, similar to the Michelin guys. I mean, they might be taking that over right now, but, I mean, you got Restaurant Danielle. I mean, they just took number three in the world, which is it's awesome. I kind of get a little bit of goosebumps saying that. Cause like very lucky. I get to walk into the back of that kitchen. I know a lot of the great chefs all through the levels there up to Danielle himself. But I mean, favorite. I mean, again, I always say you have to go back to the roots and basics. It's not Michelin at all, but I mean, I don't think the Michelin guys are brave enough to go down to Chinatowns yet. But if you just find just a simple barbecue shop that has a Peking duck dish that's cooked properly, it's nice, juicy, succulent, crispy skin. I'd say that's my favorite. I mean, one. I was, again, lucky enough when I was in undergrad, I worked at Sankey Peking Duck House in Philadelphia.
So yeah.
I was, I think I was one of the few non-Asian workers there. So it was an amazing experience and learned a lot from how business is done in that type of restaurant all the way to the cooking styles.
Yeah. And you told me about that. And my office in the Philadelphia office for Pavone Group and Quench is right on 7th and Arch. So we're literally right there.
Yeah, so two blocks off.
Yeah. So my next visit there, I'm gonna go there for lunch. I can't wait. So.
Yeah. Or Uber Eats some back to the office and take it home.
There you go. That's right. That's perfect. Well, Joey, this was awesome. Again, I appreciated the tour. It's just wonderful talking to you. Your family story is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Any final thoughts? Anything else you want to throw out there? Or?
No, I mean, just this is a lot of fun. Excited for the future and just very optimistic in the food world. I think the more people are willing to try what other people cook out there, different types of restaurants, different types of cuisines. And I mean, if you see another person eating it, it's safe to eat. If someone isn't eating it, don't eat it. So just be adventurous. And of course, if Duck makes that list, I hope it's number one on there. And again, just thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun and appreciate it.
My pleasure. Well, thank you so much.